this podcast from Adelaide Place Baptist Church. We are a community of disciples, apprentices of Jesus, who live and work in the city of Glasgow, and it's our vision to join God in the renewal of all things. Our discipleship to Jesus is for all of our lives, so as well as listening to this podcast, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning or get involved in one of our missional communities, which are across the city throughout the week. Our prayer is that you encounter Jesus in some way through this podcast. More information can be found at apbc.net.
So you've joined us kind of now in the middle of a series we've called Practicing the Way of Jesus. And the emphasis through this first block, we're going to come back to this series a couple of times in blocks next year, maybe towards the year after that as well. It's not a flash in the pan thing. We're saying discipleship is really important, and the blessing is in the doing, the obedience, stepping into putting these things into practice. So practicing the way of Jesus is our theme. And this first block, the drive and the energy and the language even is to encourage us to be with Jesus. It's about rest. It's about being with Jesus in order to become like Jesus and do the things he would have us do. And for some, I know you and you know me, for some of us will struggle with the idea of just, you know, being with Jesus. It will sound maybe entirely mystical or passive, and you're like, you're maybe a diehard activist who just loves to do stuff. You're always like, give me just something practical, I'll do it. And, you know, I want to go and paint, I want to go and change the world, I go on mission 10 times a year. And you might struggle with just a message that says, hold on a minute, as in an age of now, in a fast-moving culture, what would it look like for us to first be with Jesus? Before he sent his disciples out to change the world, to do all cool stuff, he said, come, be with me. Let me change the way you think. Let me enlarge your thinking. You know, the world is not flat, it's round. You know, enter into the new way of thinking, the new things I am doing. Once that newness of the kingdom gets in your heart, and Jesus starts to send his people out. And so there's that dynamic some of you will be what you might call next generation leaders. You're maybe under the age of, I don't know, 25, something like that. And I remember being at that age going like, part of me, if I'm being honest, I was loving opportunity. I wanted the limelight, I'll be honest with you. I wanted the limelight. I'm just going to put that out there. And actually, there's so many times the most important things as I kind of had these hopes for what God might do in my life and all these sort of optimistic hopes of what God would do, God kept taking me to this place of actually, you know, the example of David, you know, before he was famous for all his great accomplishments in the Bible, not David Roy, by the way, King David, before he did all the cool stuff, David was developing intimacy, learning battles away from the limelight in the hidden places. Just like Jesus, his ministry on earth, short 3 years public ministry, but actually so much of the cultivating was done in the place out of sight, in the place of intimacy. And it's really important for all of us, particularly you next generation young leaders who have so much ambition that we want to encourage, to be in that place where you are cultivating intimacy. So our goal is to be with Jesus. And this morning, I would love us to explore the idea of Sabbath rest for the body. Now, I'm not going to lie to you, it might feel like a strange concept. We've had, in some ways, set the scene a couple of weeks ago, reflecting a wee bit on where the Sabbath ideas come. We see it in the story of Genesis, the creation, the with the grain of how God has made us be. God is not a workaholic, God rests. But the announcement of the Sabbath came as the fourth commandment in the backdrop of the people of God's liberation out of Egypt from the old lords of Pharaoh and being driven into the ground for their production. All Pharaoh was interested in was more bricks, more bricks, more bricks. And actually, when God announced this thing of Sabbath, he was bringing them out of the old way, out from those old lords and into a new way of being and into this gift of rest, this idea of just rest and recovery and relief. And so we're honing in on this idea a bit more, not moving past it too quickly in case we're just a wee bit prone to go, that's that done, moving on next time, nailed Sabbath, doubtful. And we're going honing in on this idea of Sabbath rest of the body, being with Jesus. And it's interesting for me because before I was a priest, a minister, sorry, pastor, all that, I was a physiotherapist. So I was a physio for about 5 years in Aberdeen, and all my training was to notice what goes on in the body, to observe it. The next slide, just to bore you, so there's four basic posture types. So there's flat back, there's a kyphal lordotic, there's a sway back posture, and then there's the sort of ideal alignment sort of a thing, sway back as well. And basically, there's four basic postures that every human in the whole planet falls into the category of one of these types of postures, which is probably interesting to some, not interesting to others. But, you know, I was trained to notice what goes on. You're probably sitting there thinking, T-shirts off, what would I be? And you'd be trained to notice what sort of posture. Can we take that slide away? I'm bored of it already. You know, as people would sit in the waiting room, you were trained not just to begin the consultation in your room, you'd watch them walk through, you'd watch which way they're putting their weight on which foot. You're watching as you're listening to the person, the way their head was tilting. One, was it moving away from pain? Was it moving towards pain? You were taught all sorts of things to look at in the body to understand what it's telling you, to tell you what's going on. And do you know, it's a fascinating thing when you do that, when you actually just start honing in on what these bodies that we all have, as glorious as they are, and you start to hone in on that. And so it's kind of fun in some ways for me to be thinking about this from a slightly different angle. I'm not going to bore you with any more physio facts. If you want to know your posture type afterwards, go to somebody else. I don't really care anymore, I'll be honest with you. But so the body is important in Christianity. And Christian hope, you know, we sing about hope, and we should sing about hope. It's a hopeful movement we are a part of. But Christian hope is very much connected with a bodily hope. A hope in the resurrection of Jesus' body was really significant. It's what our hope that in his resurrection, we will find our resurrection, and it will be a bodily resurrection. The Christian hope is very much connected to a material understanding of the world, that actually the material world is important. It's out of sync through the fall and sin and rebellion. But the material world is still God's design. It's what he's going to renew the relationship of heaven and earth and those things coming into harmony together. The physical in Christianity is never irrelevant, and the body is never irrelevant. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, will talk about in 1 Corinthians the perishable body needing to be clothed with the imperishable body in 1 Corinthians. And of course, he will go on to say, look, if there is no resurrection, look, there's no hope. There's no other form of sort of mystic hope if there is no bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. And again, in the gospel writers go at lengths to tell us about, you know, the moment Thomas, where he touches the scars of Jesus. The resurrected Jesus, albeit different body and glorified, is still recognizable as the one who was crucified on the tree. Again, another clue as you read the Gospels that what Jesus did on the cross was really significant on a massive scale, but never lost the importance of just this bodily, material world being recovered, renewed, restored. And so Christian hope in the body has a lot going on. And there's later developments which we'll not go into just for the sake of now, but in Western thought and theology and influences that have an expression of dualism. It's kind of Plato's theology where this idea that the spirit is sort of encased and trapped in a body, and it kind of leads to the idea that the body is less so, and there's really this spirit in you that's really the gold and the important part. And that has had an influence on a sort of dualism in our theology, that sort of two things split apart that really just should be together. And there's also influences, if you go through the medieval times, on concepts of heaven and hell, and that again have just painted quite abstract pictures of what is going on in ultimate terms, that again has influenced our thought and led us much more like body less important, spirit good and really good, and has definitely had an impact on the way Western thought and theology goes in Christianity. But I want us to hold on to the idea this morning that Jesus attends to the whole person. And there's no dualism, the splitting of two good things that are meant to go together under his lordship and care. And our bodies are good gifts that need Sabbath rest. And Jesus would invite you and I into that this morning. Amen. As you say, yes, just I'll do it right now as you're talking. I'll sleep. Anyway, don't do that. Sunday afternoons. So our bodies are good gifts that need Sabbath rest. And I wonder what life and energy we could recover, maybe imperfectly, but if we could just bring these things together, body, mind, and soul, spirit, however you want to divide, and bring them together and see what God wants to do among us here this morning. I want you to turn to Mark chapter 2, and we're going to read just of a little interaction Jesus has with his disciples. It's verse 23 to 28, and I just want to explore this moment to get at something of this idea of Jesus and the Sabbath rest for the body. So one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? And in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he," Jesus said to them, "the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Now, what you need to understand here, and if you'll probably have seen this in the Gospels time and time again, is that there is this tension with the religious establishment and Jesus and his disciples going through all of the Gospels. And it actually is often used around the issues to do with the Sabbath. Already before the bit in Mark's Gospel we've just read, they've been arguing over fasting. Why is your disciples not fasting? And he's like, "Oh, well, chill out. Is this what's going on? Why would you if I'm here?" Do you know? And why are you eating with sinners and tax collectors and people like that? And Jesus is like, "I'm here to help them," and stuff like that. And then again, we have this tension of, and the bigger narrative before we even get to Sabbathness is that Jesus' authority is being questioned and tested left, right, and center. And it's this moment we get something of the heart of God as Jesus responds. And the Pharisees were trying to build a case against Jesus. They were trying to accuse him, and they were trying to question, Who do you really think you are? And we find this is one of those passages. For those of you who are doing the Alpha course, you'll know, you know, it's so important to understand who Jesus is when it comes to this whole thing of faith. It all hangs on who Jesus is. And this is one of these moments, these clues, where Jesus says, "Look, this is who I am." He knew his authority was being tested. And he demonstrates in this moment that he is one who can interpret God's laws wisely and accurately, and the one who can perfectly reveal God's intent and heart for what is going on in this scenario. And so it's with that, then we lean in, what's God's intent and heart? And we have this proclamation, the Sabbath was for man, or this reordering, actually. The Sabbath was for man, not man for the Sabbath. The specific need here is really rather basic. I'm sure you'll grasp that. It was about hunger, food, like as basic as things get, basic physical needs. So the disciples were hungry and they picked some ears of corn in the field to try and just satisfy their basic physical needs. And oddly enough, present in the text is a sort of religiosity which sounds spiritual, like negating physical needs in order to uphold Torah. And On first reading, it might have sounded like the more religious thing. Do suck it up and just, you know, don't be hungry. And there's a sort of reference to the law about not working on the Sabbath here that they're trying to, the Pharisees are trying to say, like, this applies here. And but this sort of spirituality, this negating the physical, is firmly rebuked, authoritatively rebuked by the one who claims to be the Son of Man, who have referred back to the book of Daniel, say the Son of Man is an epic claim for a figure who is going to rule and reign and put right. And so he is saying quite sharply, if you will, you've got this completely wrong. You've got this the wrong way round. Just hold on to that thought. And this is kind of our sort of leap off moment from this text, this moment. That thought, the contrast of a religious Pharisee who wanted to look very spiritual, awfully spiritual, but was completely missing out on the basic point and on God's heart by not attending to a very basic fact and order that Sabbath rest was for man who is made in the image of God, for mankind. It's for our good, our bodies. It was God's provision for us. It wasn't some abstract rule that says, I know how to make life a bit more, you know, keep people on their toes. Here's a rule, you know, 24 hours, please, and no work. It's not that hard at all. But it's for them. It's for their bodies. It's for their well-being. It's for their blessing. And it's at this point, I was just, you could go lots of different places but I want to review just a wee bit of Jesus' ministry, just on that point. And by Mark 5, Jesus has already healed and forgiven the paralyzed man who was lowered through the roof. He's healed the demoniac who has just pestered his whole life. He has healed a man with a shriveled hand, again on the Sabbath, probably just to wind them up and, you know, really get at something here. And then he's raised Jairus' daughter from the dead, and he's healed a woman who is bleeding with a condition for years and excluded from a community for years. Jesus has done all by Mark's gospel, Mark 5. He has done a whole heap of things. Time and time again, we see Jesus in doing an amazing healing ministry, and he deals every situation out of compassion for different moments. It's just so clear. It's just his heart is burning for them, but Jesus, time and time again, he deals with the whole person. He actually often begins with the physical, and yes, never just leaves it there and pushes it often towards, say, look, this is one thing, but here's another thing about being brought home to your relationship with God, your Father. But Jesus holds the two things together. He deals with the whole person. I mentioned as a physio, I was trained to look at the, you know, body types, postures, you know, tilt, pelvis, blah, 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 all that stuff. But those of you who've been trained in any of the sort of healthcare professions will know that you're never trained to deal with, your specialty might be in the physical, but you're never trained, at least not when I was, to just deal with that alone. You're always trained to deal with the whole picture, the spiritual, the relational bits. You're always trained to think broader and wider. And how often, sometimes within, I think, Christianity, maybe, perhaps, broad claim, but we just tend to just think, oh, that's about the spiritual thing, and actually ignore the wider picture because there's a little Pharisee just lurking around the corner in all of us, perhaps. But so just as I was trained to try and deal with the whole picture, there's something, I think, of an invitation here in the ministry of Jesus. Even at a scant look, you just go, he just deals with the whole person. The Sabbath rest is for us. He's not given us this something to hold you back. He comes and says, I want to give you something. I want to invite you into something refreshing, renewing, energizing. And I started to wonder, you know, how just on that very idea, how can this start to go wrong in our world, in our lives today, you know, when these things just fall out of sync? And at one level, it's just a simple answer of self-care. Do you know those moments on a plane when the air hostess comes out and says to you, you know, in the unlikely event of, you know, this plane falling out of the sky or bursting into flames, and the oxygen comes down, they tell you, for people, kids, put the oxygen on yourself and sort yourself out first and then sort out the children and people. And do you know, there's a basic common sense here in that moment where we all go like, yeah, I hope the plane doesn't fall out of the sky, blah, blah, blah. But the basic common sense is, look, we're no good to other people if we've got no oxygen ourselves. We're no good if we've no life jacket when we're in the sea. And how can we help other people? There's just a very basic thing here called self-care, looking after yourself, that is going on. And this is a moment where you can see this going wrong in lots of different ways. For some of you, it might not be you. It's somebody you know and love. It's maybe a parent or somebody you've just seen them their whole life and you just want to get them and say, look, look after yourself. Like, you're going to starve yourself unless you actually allow yourself to rest so that you can be helpful for those around about you. It can go wrong like that. Maybe it's just an underappreciation of the physical and the potential and enjoyment. Maybe you're sitting here going like, you're like, what's he talking about? I'm like 25, I'm in my prime, I could run all day long. You're just sitting here and you're going like, you're bursting with life and energy and 10Ks and you're feeling, you know, I could just nail all of those Munros. Munros, by the way, if you're new to Scotland, are little hills that take a couple of hours to scoot up and down. People big them up, they're really easy. I've not done them yet, but like, people go on about Munros as if they're difficult. Do you know, you're maybe sitting there going, I could just nail the Munros like tomorrow, all of them, all 10 of them, more than 10. But you might just be in that place where just underappreciating that energy that you have, those moments you have where you can feel strong and step out and run and go far and go fast. And actually, there's just something God-given that's good. You know, we underappreciate that. You know, I'm not going to dad bods. I've got something in my note about dad bods, but I'll just ignore that for now. But, you know, I'm at that age. Anyway, moving on. Let's leave dad bods aside. It can be just about a low self-esteem is where it can go wrong. Our bodies, we don't feel comfortable with them. And, of course, our culture when it comes to these bodies is very much, you know, primarily through the lens of sex appeal and image and Instagram and what they look like. And actually, it's just another wee moment, not entirely related to this passage, but you can see how the body can get miskewed and out of disorderly in our thinking. And we can just have a chronic sense of discomfort or poor relationship with how we are. It manifests, I think, in our sleep. I'm going to a conference at the end of this month on sleep in a church. Sleep when it goes wrong. You know, the whole world goes wrong in my experience. And it's hard to pray when you've not slept. It's hard to be nice. It's hard to do many things if sleep goes wrong. It can go wrong in so many different ways. But I guess there's only really a couple of things I want to say to that. One is to ask, where does that leave us? Where does that leave you and I and us here this morning? And I think one of the places it has to leave us as we think about this whole theme is to be able to acknowledge frustration with our bodies and reality. Because the danger is, you talk about the Sabbath rest theme and this bodies feeling brilliant theme, and actually there's a reality check in the sort of world that we live in that is fighting against us on this whole thing. And I think we just need to be able to acknowledge a degree of frustration, even to be able to acknowledge the frustration of like a chronic pain in our bodies that inhibits, a chronic condition in our bodies that just holds us back from not being able to go after what we want to go after. And as Christians, 1 Peter is just life and breath to us, because it doesn't say, look, here and now is all there is. It points to a living hope. Listen to these words from 1 Peter 1. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, in his great mercy, has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In all of this, you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you've not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you're receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Just to keep you on track, your souls is not just your soul, spirit, it's everything of who you are. And so Christianity says on the one hand, look, you can talk about your frustrations because actually there is a day where the frustrations will be dealt with fully, wholly, and completely. The hope is bodily. So it says, you know, you have permission to acknowledge the frustration that we experience, the frustration we have even with our own bodies. I think that's one place it can leave us. But there's also a place it might can leave us. There's another story in the Bible. There's a man, a gifted man, who was operating in his gifts. He was knocking out the park. He was powerful. He had a track record. He had success. But this man, Elijah, despite the gifting, despite the success, got to the point where he had become dangerously tired. And do you know there's good tired? We all know good tired, right? Good tired is, you know, you've gone up your Monroe and down in half an hour and you're knackered and you just sleep well. That's good tired. Dangerously tired is this thing that accumulates and accumulates and accumulates. And suddenly we have moments like Elijah where he had a breaking point. After tremendous spiritual success where he just knocked it out of the park on Mount Carmel, go and read the story in 1 Kings if you want, he finds himself running for his life and he actually prays a prayer, God, just take my life. I can't do this anymore. And just collapses right down after a moment of brilliance. And you're like, what was going on there? And if you know the story in 1 Kings, actually, the first thing God does for Elijah is he says, go take a nap. And then he's provided breakfast, actually. And then he gets another nap, two naps. And breakfast again. And you're like, it's an amazing moment. I had one of those moments yesterday at birthday parties and just tired, it's Benji's birthday party, and I just noticed there's a moment in the day where it's all busy, and thought, nobody's going to notice if I just go upstairs and, you know, nap, and just kind of fell into my bed, and just had a wee moment, and then Claire came up, and I was just like, Claire, this is just obedience, this is just worship. I mean, your time will come, different bodies here, I'm just in this moment, and sleep and food are the provision. But the thing about the Elijah story is really significant, is that God asks a question. And when God asks questions in the Bible, like, it sounds ridiculous if you think God, who knows everything, is all powerful, asks a question. But the reason God asks a question in the Bible isn't for his own understanding to increase. He asks a question because he's inviting the person to face into something that they need to see, a reality. He's helping them to articulate where they're actually at. And so the question goes to Elijah, what are you doing here, Elijah? He asked it twice. What's going on? How did you end up from there to here, whimpering in the corner? He asked the question. A moment to wake up to reality, wake up to what God's showing and doing. Do you know one of the things we call leaders to is to be living examples, not perfect examples? And that we're to model something of health, and that can be really hard. And I remember sitting down with, I see a spiritual director every 6 weeks or so, somebody who just sits and listens to you, prays with you, and guides you through your thoughts about what God's doing. About 2 years ago, I sat in my first conversation with my spiritual director. It was about football. I said, poor guy, he's going to just get my interest in everything God says to me through football. But he was very patient with me, and I said to him, I felt God was speaking to me one time through Rio Ferdinand and watching the highlights of Barcelona on the TV. And he didn't flinch, so I thought, well done, he didn't flinch. And there's a moment at Rio Ferdinand, I'm talking about Barcelona destroying probably Liverpool or something like that, and he said, you know, Suarez, Messi, and Neymar back then are at their most terrifying best when they look like they're enjoying themselves. And that's what Rio Ferdinand said after the match. And I was just like, I just leapt out of the TV at me, it's just like, yeah, they're terrifying best when they look like they're enjoying themselves. And I said to my spiritual director, I was just like, do you know, there's something about that journey I feel God's inviting me on to be at my best when I'm actually enjoying myself. Not because at the minute, the reality is I feel like I'm dragging myself through. The honest question in my heart 2 years ago was like, what more can I do? And I literally kept coming back to that time and time again. It's like, yeah, there's reasons, young family and church. But I was like, what more can I do was the question of my heart. And I thought, yeah, I thought the way it worked was great. Identified the problem, the solution will be coming in a couple of weeks. A breakthrough came about 2 years later, and it was an odd moment because it was when somebody, there's a few pastors sitting in my office, study, where lounge, whatever you call it, and he just talked about, in quite a lot of detail, about his Sabbath rhythm in concrete ways. And I thought, it's a bit odd, sounds a bit twee, a bit boring, I'll be honest with you, but fine for you. But it kind of got underneath my skin a bit, because it's so concrete. And here's what happened. The shift was like, I actually realized, do you know what? There is another way. You know, Mary, Martha had a choice. And something just got underneath my skin, and it began something, and this conversation started to change with the spiritual director, and I was starting to enjoy. Pressures were the same. Decisions were different. There was no late night prep. There's no stress until 2 a.m. I remember preaching one sermon that I barely knew what I was saying and thought, this is going to be awful. It was awful. And do you know what? I didn't die. You didn't die. It's just a limit. It's just like something about that. And the conversation started to change with my spiritual director, and I was like, and it became, here's the thing, permanent. It wasn't a yo-yo thing. It was about 9-10 months of, do you know what? There's other things going on now. But actually, a wee bit, not fully, but stepping into Neymar, Suarez, and Messi. The thing is just, what I want to land just now, is just beginning to notice and to maybe prioritize, adjust where we're at. That question. Maybe it's right for us just to sit with a question. It says, where are you? How did you get here? And maybe help us this morning to articulate to God where we are. And there's really a permission to present your need in the presence of the one who laid down his life for you. And the one who will meet us, just like Jairus the demonic, just where we're at, with how the need feels, just to present that need. And he'll meet us at that point of need. I wonder if we could just take a few moments just to bring our bodies before God in prayer. Let's do that just now and see what he would be saying to us. Why don't you just take a moment just to get comfortable in the seat, to sometimes straighten your back, and take a few deep breaths in the presence of the one who created us. Let your intention be, just in these moments, just to rest, not to force an experience, not to worry about a neighbor, just to be at rest in the presence of God, the one who created you. Let it be enough to rest in God and have the rest as a prayer without words. And then maybe just start to notice anything that you're feeling in your body, and maybe just welcome it or notice it, or without trying to understand it, but just notice what is going on in your body. Notice your energy, what feels good and strong and ready to go. Or notice your tiredness. that which feels unbalanced, stressed, or misused. And rest in Him. For thus said the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest you shall be saved. In quietness and trust shall be your strength. My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me, but I have calmed and quietened myself. I'm like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore. Choose to be present to you, God, with all that we have. We come as we are to the one who laid down his life for us. Amen. Let's worship.